taking their place in a long true line of everyday Americans,
helping to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. This is the Constitution Study on the America Out Loud Network with your host, Paul Engel.
Pay the bills, stay out of jail, love the neighbors and have a few good friends. Every day you are everyday Americans.
Hello there, everyday Americans, and welcome to the Constitution Study. I am still on the road. I'm having a grand time meeting people, talking with people, having these wonderful discussions out here on the road. I've been in the Tampa area for a couple of days. I'm having a great time. I am running around like a chicken with his head cut off, but I'm having a grand time. One of the things I've been talking about a lot lately, really basis is a basic foundational concept to the structure of our governments. There are really two things that we can use that are like the cornerstones. They are the Supremacy Clause and the 10th Amendment. So I wrote an article looking at the competing between taking the Supremacy Clause and the 10th Amendment and pitting it against these recent, the most recent spate of mandates. So let's go through that article.
By now, you've probably heard of Jen Psaki's response to the question about Texas standing up to Biden's threatened vaccine mandates. She stated that federal law trumps state law. I guess it's true that the best lie should contain a bit of truth, but today let's answer the question of whether federal law always trumps state law. Let's do so by looking at the original document so we can answer this question not only when it comes to vaccine mandates, but all of the acts coming out of Washington, D.C. When Ms. Psaki talks about federal law trumping state law, she was referring to the Supremacy Clause found in Article 6, Clause 2 of the Constitution of the United States. This Constitution and the laws of the United States which shall be made in pursuance thereof, and all treaties made or which shall be made under the authority of the United States, shall be the supreme law of the land, and the judges in every state shall be bound thereby, anything in the Constitution or laws of any state to the contrary, notwithstanding. To understand this clause, we need to break it down. The Supremacy Clause lists three things that are the supreme law of the land. First, the Constitution of the United States is the supreme law of the land. That's pretty simple. Second, the laws of the United States are supreme, but not all laws of the United States. See, only the laws of the United States made pursuant to the Constitution are considered supreme, meaning laws done in consequence or prosecution of anything, hence agreeable or conformable. Since only the laws of the United States made pursuant or conformable to the Constitution are given the high place of supreme law of the land, we've already shown that Ms. Psaki's statement isn't entirely correct. Before we get into that, though, let's look at the third thing that's the supreme law of the land. Treaties made under the authority of the United States are also considered supreme. Now, where does the United States get its authority? From the Constitution, of course. Together, we see a hierarchy of supremacy. At the top is the Constitution of the United States. Then, below that document, we have the U.S. laws made pursuant to it and treaties made under the authority granted by it. With that in mind, let's look at the question of Biden's vaccine mandates and Texas's response to it. The Governor Abbott issued Executive Order GA-40, which reads, "No entity in Texas can compel receipt of a COVID-19 vaccine by any individual, including an employee or a customer, who objects to such vaccination for any reason of personal conscience based on a religious belief or for medical reasons, including prior recovery from COVID-19. I hereby suspend all relevant statutes to the extent necessary to enforce this prohibition." So here we have two competing orders, one from the government of Washington, D.C., telling private companies they must require vaccines, the other from the government of Texas saying they can't. So which one wins? Well, let's start with the federal question. President Biden announced his intention to sign an executive order requiring employers with more than 100 employees mandate COVID-19 vaccinations as a condition of employment. Well, I have yet to find the actual executive order. The Occupations Safety and Health Association, or OSHA, a division of the Department of Labor, has proposed regulations putting President Biden's intention into law. But is that the supreme law of the land? Well, to answer that, we have to answer two questions. Is this regulation law, and was it made in pursuance of the Constitution? Now, law is defined as a rule, particularly an established or permanent rule, prescribed by the supreme power of a state to its subjects for regulating their actions, particularly their social actions. So is an OSHA regulation a rule prescribed by a supreme power of a state or to its subjects? I'd say yes. The government of the United States has delegated the power to establish rules for regulating actions, but is this rule made pursuant to the Constitution? See, here's where Ms. Psaki's statement falls apart. First, Article 1, Section 1, Clause 1 of the Constitution states, "All legislative powers herein granted shall be vested in a Congress of the United States, which shall consist of a Senate and House of Representatives." Now, legislative powers are defined as capable of enacting laws as legislative power. If all legislative power, the power of enacting laws, is delegated to Congress, how can OSHA, which is a part of the executive branch, enact law? Sure, when Congress passed the legislation that created OSHA, they gave their creation regulatory power. However, the Constitution does not authorize Congress to delegate its legislative power, so that legislation was not made pursuant to the Constitution. Furthermore, while I haven't read the legislation, I've been told that creating vaccine mandates is not a power Congress supposedly gave to OSHA. Being pursuant to the Constitution is not only simply about the question of Congress delegating its lawmaking power to the executive branch. Enter the 10th Amendment. The power is not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states, are reserved to the states respectively, or to the people. In order for a law to be made pursuant to the Constitution, it must enact a power delegated to the United States by the Constitution. Now, look all you want, but you will not find the power to regulate private businesses or their employees delegated to the United States. Neither is the power to regulate the healthcare decisions for millions of Americans delegated to the United States. Since the 10th Amendment states that powers not delegated to the United States are reserved to others, any legislation Congress may pass to enact those powers is not pursuant to the Constitution. So where does that leave Biden's mandate? Well, according to Alexander Hamilton in Federalist Papers No. 78, "There is no position which depends on clearer principles than that every act of a delegated authority, contrary to the tenor of the commission under which it is exercised, is void." So if every act of a delegated authority contrary to its commission is void, what does that say about OSHA's regulation? For that matter, what does it say about the legislation that created OSHA without that power being delegated to the United States? Continuing the Alexander Hamilton quote, "No legislative act, therefore, contrary to the Constitution, can be valid. To deny this would be to affirm that the deputy is greater than this principle, that the servant is above his master, that the representatives of the people are superior to the people themselves, that men acting by virtue of powers may do not only what their powers do not authorize, but what they forbid." So if the legislative act that created OSHA cannot be valid, meaning the agency itself is invalid, how can a regulation they promulgate be valid? To claim that anything OSHA does is valid means they're not only doing what they're not authorized to do, but what they are forbidden to do. Now, Mr. Hamilton pointed out that this idea that the federal government can do whatever it wants, even in contradiction of the Constitution that created it, is ridiculous. The very idea that the representatives of the people are superior to the people was as unthinkable to Mr. Hamilton as your deputy being superior to the sheriff or a servant being superior to their master. Yet that is the state of affairs today in America. Now, you may point out that the Federalist Papers are not law. Rather, they are commentaries in support of ratification of the Constitution as originally presented to the states. However, this idea that congressional acts are contrary to the Constitution are void was recognized by the Supreme Court. Certainly, all those who have framed written constitutions contemplate them as forming the fundamental and paramount law of a nation. And consequently, the theory of every such government must be that an act of the legislature repugnant to the Constitution is void. So if the act of the legislature that created OSHA is repugnant to the Constitution, which I have already shown makes it void, where does that leave the vaccine mandate and the Texas executive order? Now, at first, you may think this proves the Texas executive order wins the battle. Before you jump to that conclusion, though, let's take a look at it again. No entity in Texas can compel the receipt of a COVID-19 vaccine by any individual, including an employee or a consumer, who objects to such vaccination for any reason of personal conscience, based on a religious belief, or for a medical reason, including prior recovery from COVID-19, I hereby suspend all relevant statutes to the extent necessary to enforce this prohibition. The problem with the Texas executive order is not that it's superseded by federal law, but that it violates the constitutions of both Texas and the United States. It's perfectly legal for Texas to tell Washington, D.C. that their mandate violates the agreement the states have and therefore cannot be enforced within their state. However, neither the state nor the federal government have the authority to deprive private business owners control of those businesses. Both constitutions prohibit depriving these business owners of the property they have in their businesses, including control of those businesses. So Ms. Psaki is wrong. Not all laws of the United States are superior to state laws. Of course, that doesn't mean that the Texas executive order doesn't have its problems as well. Either way, knowing what the Constitution actually says makes all the difference in the world. Perhaps if the administrations in both Austin and Washington, D.C., read and studied the constitutions they took an oath to support, we would have fewer of these conflicts and illegal orders.
So I suppose that brings up the elephant in the room, right? What do we do if the Constitution says this is wrong, this is illegal, it's a violation of the law? What do we do? I think we need to remember that the Constitution is nothing but ink on parchment. Yes, it's law, but it's an inanimate object. It's involving ideas and thoughts, and it is not going to get up, throw a cape on like some Marvel superhero, and come flying to our rescue. It is our justification to hold government in check. It's the recognition of what government is supposed to do and not supposed to do, but it is up to us to hold government accountable. As James Garfield said, President James Garfield in 1876, now more than ever, the people are responsible for the character of their Congress. If that body be ignorant, reckless, and corrupt, it's because the people tolerate ignorance, recklessness, and corruption. If it be intelligent, brave, and pure, it is because the people demand these fine qualities in those that represent them in the national legislature. See, we look at what Congress is doing, and we want to point the finger and you know, blame the donkeys, blame the elephants, blame individual people, but they're all there because we the people sent them there. You may not have voted for them, but your neighbors most likely voted for the person that currently represents you in both the House and the Senate. Shenanigans aside, corruption and fraud aside, the vast majority of the people in Congress had got more votes than people who didn't. And the situations where that was not the case, where there was fraud, well, the people that are supposed to investigate and prosecute the fraud all work for us. They're all our employees. So as President Garfield said, they're our fault. And until we swallow that bitter pill and take responsibility for our actions, all we're doing is rearranging deck chairs while the Titanic goes down. So when I talk about the Supremacy Clause and I talk about the 10th Amendment, they should be what we use to vet our candidates, to understand if they are doing their job or if they're going to do their job. I was speaking to a group last night. We had a great time, and I was talking about our need to hold our elected officials accountable, that 2022 and 2024 and 2026 are job reviews, and we need to treat them like that. And I used a story from the movie Saving Private Ryan, right? We remember the movie, most of us. At the end of the movie, Captain Miller is dying, and he looks at Private Ryan, the man who not only he, but most of his team gave their lives to save. He looks at him, and he says, "Earn this." Ladies and gentlemen, it's time we start looking our elected officials in the eye at all levels, state, local, federal. Look them in the eye and demand they earn that position. They aren't owed that position. They don't have a right to that position. They have to earn it. They have to prove to us that our faith in them, our trust in them, is warranted. That the sacrifices we make to put them in office was worth it. Just as Captain Miller was asking Private Ryan to earn the sacrifice that his men had made for him. Now, in the middle of this, a gentleman in the middle of the crowd, there's probably a couple of hundred people there, a gentleman in the middle of the crowd stands up and he starts to tell a story. And I'm hoping I get a chance to actually talk with him more, possibly bring him on the program. But he talked about what it cost him. He talked about what he and his family paid to live at liberty. And he stood up and said, I am running for Congress to do what this man was just talking about. That to me is a man who stood up. And I told him, I looked him right in the eye and said, if you do that, if you earn the trust of these people, then they will support you. We were talking about our rights and our liberties, and I was so moved by a man that was so passionate to go to Washington to do the right thing, to be the atypical politician that would take the Supremacy Clause and the 10th Amendment and the entire Constitution and apply it. I was moved. I got the chance to talk to him briefly afterwards. I had a bunch of people talk to us. But those are the people we need to put in place. See, they're the people that will stand in the way when an out-of-control president issues a mask mandate. And I'm not just talking about a Congress. Sure, Congress could get in the way. Judges could be a roadblock. But what about the states? What about the local level? What about the, you know, where are the governors and the attorneys general that are doing more than just suing in federal court, begging the federal government for protection from itself? Where are they standing up and saying, wait a second, the 10th Amendment says we didn't give this to you. We didn't delegate this to you. This is not a power we gave you. 10th Amendment says you don't have it. Supremacy Clause says what the Constitution said supersedes anything Congress does if it's not made pursuant to the Constitution. You won't do this. If you do this in our state, we will not allow it in our state. If you attempt to enforce it in our state, we will arrest you and charge you and try you. And if you're found guilty, we will fine or imprison you. I know that is heresy to so many people. But that's because they've been taught an inverted understanding of the Constitution. The federal government doesn't lord over the states. The states are not vassals to Washington, D.C. D.C. is their creation. We, the people, through our states, created the government. And we created the United States. We created its government. We created the three branches. We created all those offices. We set the rules and regulations for them. But our ignorance and our cowardice over decades, over multiple generations, has led us to a point where the plain, simple language of the 10th Amendment and the Supremacy Clause isn't known, isn't applied, to the point where Jen Psaki can, with a straight face, stand in front of the press corps and claim the Supremacy Clause states something it absolutely categorically does not. And she gets away with it, not because the press lets her get away with it, because we let her get away with it. The press is just another business. We support them or we don't support them. But by understanding both the Supremacy Clause and the 10th Amendment, and I would recommend things like the 4th, 5th, and 14th Amendments as well, so many of the issues we're dealing with these vaccine mandates, these onerous regulations, these multitude of new offices, and swarms of officers sent to harass us and eat out our substance can be dealt with a proper understanding of just a small portion of the Constitution. And not just, again, at the federal level, at the state level as well. This is why I do what I do. This is why I put this episode out every day. It's why I do write the articles and do the videos and travel around the country to help plant these seeds of understanding in the hopes that they will blossom, grow, and bear fruit. The knowledge and understanding, the education as the bedrock foundation on which to build what we will use to protect our rights and our liberty, and to rebuild a nation of freedom and rights and liberty that our children will be proud of. I've mentioned I'm on the road at the moment, and there's one thing I love about being on the road, doing these events. It's recognizing and seeing all of the people that are as concerned about rights and liberty as I am. To see that we are not alone. It's not just me sitting in a room with a microphone. It's not just me standing in front of my camera or my writing on my computer. This stuff, for those of you who don't know, I work from my house. I'm putting all this stuff out there, and we get relatively little feedback. Other than looking at, how many downloads of the podcast or how many views of a website, I don't get a lot of feedback. I know there are people out there reading this and listening to this, but it's the nature of the beast. So to get in front of people that are eager to learn, eager to hear, and then finding many of them that are eager to share. I just got back from a meeting with two separate meetings, back to back with individuals I met last night at one of these gatherings, so that we could exchange information, maybe share some ideas, and see if there's a way we can collaborate, so that we can work together. And part of that is realizing that we're not alone. So if you're out there today and you're listening to this broadcast and you feel like you're the only sane person left in the United States, if you spend, if you watch the news and you read the papers and you're looking through the internet and it's like we are surrounded by insanity and you feel isolated, you're not alone. And the question then becomes, how do we find each other? I mean, sure, you could try Facebook, but they're going to shadow ban. Same with YouTube. Same with Twitter. Okay, Gab and Rumble have been pretty good. I've set up a channel on Rumble TV, and I've been seeing some activity on it. And there's been some activity on the Gab social side. I set up an account on Locals, but I haven't really got it up and running yet. So how do we find each other? How do we share what we know? How do we share information? How do we find out where we've got common ground that we can work on? Well, I set up a website that you might consider. It's called constitutionscholars.com. I set it up when Facebook basically banned me, when they shut down my account because I supposedly violated their community standards, although they could never point to what I actually did that was wrong. I think it had something to do with actually explaining what the Constitution says about how the president is actually elected, which apparently is verboten on Facebook. And I wanted it to be a place where we could find other scholars. A scholar is not an expert. A scholar is a student. We're going to find other constitutional students and give them a place to not only find each other, but share information. So I set up constitutionscholars.com. You register for free. There's no, you don't have to pay anything. And you get a couple of things. There's a library of some books I put up online, links to resources that I use routinely, videos, and other material that I share up there that for the classrooms, right? I've got classrooms where I'm setting up classes and doing stuff. Yeah, there's a store where you can buy some books and other material and help support the work that we're doing. But probably the biggest part of the Constitution Scholars website are the community groups. I have a group for each of the states, as well as for the United States. And these are places where you can join and join the conversation. There's a discussion group. You can find people and link up as friends and chat back and forth. I am open to setting up new groups with new ideas. When I do my Constitution study in 2022, I'll have a community group for study members, so that people who are participating in the study can share information. Because the one thing that I keep reminding myself every time I meet with these people is, I don't know everything. Somebody will come up with an idea I haven't thought of, or a twist, or a suggestion, and vice versa. We don't have to be alone, even if we're separated by thousands of miles. We don't have to be stuck in our own heads. We can share our information and positively receive feedback. Understand that, I hate to tell you this, but you may be wrong, but don't feel bad. I may be wrong too. But it's that sharing, it's that openness that allows us to be better protectors of freedom, better patriots, better citizens, better defenders of liberty. So if you would give that website a check out, I would appreciate that greatly. If you want to become mentored, I do have a mentoring program on the Constitution Scholar site. It is, that one is a fee. You don't have to join it. But it's a place where we can mentor other people that want to not just read and study the way I do, but teach the Constitution. So check that out. If you have any questions, feel free to reach out and contact me. But I have to head off to a break. Before I do, I want you to check out, please, healthycell.com. Now, I don't know about you. My wife has me taking lots of vitamins. I'm honest. I'm a man. I probably wouldn't take the vitamins except my wife wants me to. For some reason, she wants me to hang around for a while. So we've been checking out, we've been using for a while, healthycell.com. My wife and I both like it. They have wonderful products. They have different formulas that are designed to feed your cells, to give them the nutrition they need at a cellular level, to be absorbed better into your body. Now, they've got different formulas. I'm on the road, and one of the things when I'm on the road is I generally don't sleep very well. Hotel rooms, strange beds, strange noises. It's hard to get to sleep. I got so much work to get done. So I love using Healthy Cells REM Sleep. It allows me to get drowsy, fall asleep faster, sleep better, so I can wake and attack the next day with all the vim and vigor that it truly deserves. And as an America Out Loud listener, you can get 20% off of your first order. Just go to healthycell.com/outloud or use the code OUTLOUD at checkout. Once again, that site is healthycell.com/outloud or use the code OUTLOUD at checkout.
Well, there was a time when Americans could rely on the Fourth Estate. Well, in these challenging times, the media is both reckless and complicit. AmericaOutloud.com. Top analysis from leading experts, articles, podcast, video, and 24/7 talk radio. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
In 2008, the amount of concentrated time people could spend on a task without becoming distracted was 12 seconds. 5 years later, it was only 8 seconds, 1 second less than a goldfish. If you find yourself always distracted or having trouble recalling information, you're likely to fall behind in the demanding, fast-paced 21st century. In other words, brain performance is more critical now than ever. Boost your brain power with Healthy Cells Focus Plus Recall. science-backed nootropics to sharpen focus, concentrate longer, enhance recall, improve mental speed, learn rapidly, and be more alert. It's a pill-free brain supplement made with maximum absorption technology designed to feed our brains at the cellular level. Take it for a test drive. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order of Focus Plus Recall. That's HealthyCell.com. Code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
Welcome back, everyday Americans. You've rejoined the Constitution Study. We spent the first half of the program talking about the 10th Amendment and the Supremacy Clause versus mandates, and how do we use these critical components to the Constitution to defend our rights. Well, again, we talk about mandates. We're often talking about what President Biden has done, but it's not just Biden. You know, I find it interesting that we refer to what the president spends, and we always seem to forget that it's actually Congress that authorizes the spending of money. The U.S. Treasury cannot spend a dime. They can't write a check for anything until it's been appropriated by Congress. So Congress recently passed what is euphemistically called the Build Back Better Act. Now, I don't know about you, but I've kind of learned that whatever the title of a piece of legislation is, it frequently is the opposite of what's actually in the bill. So I found a website. There's a group called the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget, and they did a quick breakdown of what is in this Build Back Better Act. I don't going to talk about the accounting gimmick tree they use to get the numbers down or any of that. I'm just looking at what they're spending the money on and asking a very simple question. Is this being spent on a power delegated to the United States by the 10th Amendment? I'm not going to give you the details. I have to look at it somewhat higher level. So they broke the spending down from the bill into different policy categories. So under the category family benefits, they're going to provide universal pre-K and establish an affordable care program. And they want to establish a paid family and medical leave program. Okay, look at the Constitution. Tell me where child care or medical leave benefits is a power delegated to the United States. The answer is it's not. So technically, this is a law not made pursuant to the Constitution. So this law is void. Now, does that mean they're not going to spend the money? Oh, they'll spend the money because when it comes to the powers of the federal government and legislation that is legally void, the emperor has no clothes. Paul, you may be saying, what do you mean this bill is void? Well, there's a whole thing I can get into, but let me summarize it from the Supreme Court's view of it in the case of Marbury versus Madison, which reads, certainly all those who frame written constitutions contemplate them as forming the fundamental and paramount law of the nation. And consequently, the theory of every such government must be that an act of the legislature repugnant to the Constitution is void. Now, since the 10th Amendment says a power not delegated to the United States belongs either to the states or to the people, when Congress exercises a power contrary to the Constitution, well, that legislation is void, which technically means that the Build Back Better Act is void, at least if we bothered following the Constitution anymore, or if we even bothered holding our elected officials and our government officials accountable to their oath to support the Constitution. You see, every senator, every representative who voted for this act violated their oath of office because they took an oath. They swore or affirmed that they would support the Constitution of the United States. This act is repugnant to the Constitution of the United States. President Biden swore an oath to faithfully execute the laws and to support the Constitution of the United States. This law is repugnant to the Constitution of the United States. Now, looking under the next category, they have climate and infrastructure. So what is included in climate? And by the way, the family benefits cost $585 billion. Everything here is with a B, billion. Now, under climate and infrastructure, we have invest in clean energy and climate resilience, establish or expand clean energy and electric tax credits, establish or expand clean fuel and vehicle tax credits, establish or expand other climate-related tax benefits, enact infrastructure and related tax benefits. Okay, so most of this stuff deals with tax benefits. Let's talk a little bit about taxes. Now, Article 1, Section 8, Clause 1 of the Constitution says that the Congress shall have the power to lay and collect taxes, duties, imposts, and excises to pay the debts and provide for the common defense and general welfare of the United States, but all duties and imposts and excises shall be uniform throughout the United States. So the first thing you have to understand is Congress isn't allowed to collect taxes to do just whatever Congress wants to. It is limited. It's to pay the debts. Boy, have we got a lot of debts. Provide for the common defense and the general welfare of the United States. We keep leaving that part out. So he doesn't say the general welfare of the people. Doesn't say the general welfare of the several states. It says the United States, the Union, the government of the United States. Just as the 10th Amendment says power is not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, here it's the general welfare of the United States. But they're going to come in and say, well, what are all these tax credits? Well, the 16th Amendment says that the Congress shall have the power to lay and collect taxes on incomes from whatever source derived without apportionment among the several states without regard to any census or enumeration. So Congress was, we allowed Congress, we the people, we gave Congress the authority to tax our income. One of the dumbest things we did. I contend that the 16th and 17th Amendments destroyed the Republic. 16th with the income tax, 17th was the direct election of senators. So what Congress is going to do is they're going to bribe the people with tax credits to get them to use clean energy and electricity, which I find absolutely hilarious because, okay, what is clean energy? Okay, solar panels, except the toxic waste created from the creating solar panels is probably more damaging to the environment than the CO2 given off by burning fossil fuels. And speaking of burning fossil fuels, since we get most of our electrical power from coal, oil, natural gas, all of which are hydrocarbons that they say are killing the earth, well, then that isn't really clean either. In fact, the only quote-unquote clean energy is probably nuclear, which we don't seem to want to use. Now, part of the problem is from what I understand, I'm not a nuclear scientist, but from what I understand is the design of our nuclear stations is less about producing energy and more about producing fuel, or I should say producing product that can be used in weapons. But okay, unless we want to find another energy source, this stuff is not so clean. We talk about electric vehicles, and oh, they're clean, they're zero emissions, except for all the smoke and carbon dioxide belched out by the power plant that generated the electricity that went into the car. See, electricity is not an energy store. It's an energy transmission. The same way that your garden hose is not a source of water, it's a transporter of water. So we have all this, oh, we got to expand climate-related tax benefits. In other words, they're going to bribe us to act the way they want, the way the special interest groups want. That's what a tax break is. They complain about tax loopholes. These are nothing but tax loopholes. You owe this much. You put a solar panel up. Okay, we'll give you this loophole to save some money, to encourage you to do certain things. But I got to back up to this invest in clean energy and climate resilience. Tell me, where in the Constitution is Congress authorized to invest in anything? In fact, the only power Congress has is under Article 1, Section 8, to promote the progress of science and useful arts by securing for limited times to authors and inventors the exclusive right to their respective writings and discoveries. In other words, Congress can create laws to issue patents and copyrights. But they have Congress cannot invest because Congress doesn't actually have money. They have public money. See, they're taking money from you to spend on something else. Now, if I take money from you to spend on something I want, it's called extortion. It's called embezzlement, actually. Embezzlement's a better term, right? If I'm working for a company and I take money out of the company till to spend on something I want, that's called embezzlement. I go to jail for that. Congress takes tax money, collects tax money. They're not to spend on something they're not authorized to take. It's called an investment. No, it's embezzlement. That's $220 billion of the $555 billion in the climate and infrastructure section. Then we get into the individual tax cuts and credits. So they want to extend the child tax credit to $3,000. They want to make the child tax credit fully refundable beyond 2023. They want to expand the earned income tax credit for a year. And they have about $10 billion in other individual tax changes. So for a Congress that seems all bent out of shape on tax loopholes, they just created $210 billion worth of tax loopholes. Of course, then we have health care, strengthen Medicaid, home and community-based services, extend expanded Affordable Care Act premium tax credits to make premium tax credits available to those in Medicaid coverage gap through 2025, establish Medicare hearing benefit, and invest in the healthcare workforce. Okay, once again, where in the Constitution is Congress authorized to spend money on healthcare? They're not. Medicaid is an illegal legislation. The Affordable Care Act is illegal legislation. They're enacting a power not authorized by the Constitution. It is void. Medicare hearing benefit, illegal. Investing in the healthcare workforce, illegal. This is $335 billion of ill-gotten gains, of theft from the American people. See, a lot of people say taxes are theft. I qualify that. We have authorized Congress to collect taxes to do certain things. We've authorized them to pay the debts, to provide a common defense, and for the general welfare of the federal government, the United States. That's it. Now, if I hire some kid to mow my lawn, and I said, listen, I'm not home all the time. Here's what you do. Go, you know, when you're done mowing the lawn, go into the garage, take a $20 bill. Here's a box. Take a $20 bill, you know, every time, you know, when you come and mow the lawn. That's not theft. Right? I've told him, come take money from me to do this. I'm authorizing you to do that. That is not theft. However, he mows the lawn once, comes in, takes five $20 bills. Four of those $20 bills is theft. Part of it I authorized, part of it did not. That is theft. That's what Congress does. This is theft. This is embezzlement. This is, and because of the size, $335 billion just for healthcare, this is grand theft on a whole nother level. What have we got? Oh, we've got other spending and tax cuts, build and support affordable housing, increase higher education and workforce spending, and then a bunch of other spending and investments. Well, once again, affordable housing, not a power delegated to Congress. It is not a general welfare of the United States. This is bribery. Same thing with higher education and workforce spending, not a power authorized by the Constitution. So there's $310 billion in theft, in embezzlement. Let's see, reduce or delay TCJA-based broadening. I have no idea what TCJA is, but what they have, increase SALT deduction cap to $80,000 through 2025. This one's absolutely hilarious. Because the people that are pushing this are the ones that say tax the rich. So they're going to give the rich a tax break. Now, for those who don't know what the SALT deduction is, having lived in a high tax state, I used to live in the state of New York, high income tax, high property tax, I was allowed to use that as a deduction against my federal tax. Meaning, in effect, the federal government was subsidizing a portion of my state taxes which made it a little more bearable. The last tax reform, they put a cap on the SALT deduction. Now, what does this have to do with taxing the rich? Well, tell me, where are the people who tend to be the richest and pay the most in state and local taxes? Who pays the most in state and local taxes? Isn't that the rich? No, sure. There are people who are not rich in those locations, in those states and in those cities. But if you're paying $80,000 a year in state and local taxes, my guess is you're not a middle class, worker. You're not a blue collar worker. You're not the person struggling to pay the bills. So this is specifically a tax relief for the rich. Then he goes into some other, delay amortization of research and experimental expenses. So we're going to play a little bit of tax nonsense. And that's $290 billion, by the way, for both of those. So $285 billion tax break for the rich. Everybody who has a person claiming they want to tax the rich who voted for this, ask them why they gave the rich a $285 billion tax break. Now, they say they're going to enact immigration reform is somehow going to save them $100 billion. I have no idea how they're supposed to do that. Now, there's $2.4 trillion with a T, $2,400 billion, or $2,400,000,000. Just a ginormous number. So how are they going to pay for this? Well, they're going to increase corporate taxes. Again, I love that. We're going to pay for this. We're going to pay for the money we stole. Huh? They're not paying for it. Congress isn't paying for it. They're going to steal more money from the American people to pay off the money they've embezzled, to cover the money they've embezzled to spend elsewhere. So what do they want to do? They want to impose a 15% domestic minimum tax on large corporations. Oh, we're going to have our tax policy dictated by other countries. And no one's going to cheat on that. Yeah, that's right. They want to impose a 15% global minimum tax and reform international taxation. They want to impose a 1% surcharge on corporate stock buyback and then other tax reforms. They say that's going to save them $830 billion. See, because Joe Biden can't do math. $2.4 trillion adds up to zero in his mind. Right. So, okay, they're going to increase taxes. I'm assuming they're talking on income. So, when they talk about tax, corporate taxes and global minimum taxes, these must be taxed. That's the only thing they're legally allowed to tax. But when they want to put a surcharge on stock buybacks, that one's a little trickier. Remember, Article 1, Section 8, Clause 1. Congress can lay and collect taxes, duties, imposts, and excises to pay for debts and common defense and general welfare. So is this an excise, a surcharge? Is this just an excise? I don't know. That one, I'm not a lawyer. I don't know all that stuff, but that's supposed to save them a chunk of money. Then they're going to increase individual taxes on high earners, which I find hilarious because they just gave high earners a tax break, $285 billion tax break. So they want to expand the net investment income tax. They're going to impose a 5% surtax on income above $10 million, an 8% surtax on income above $25 million. And they want to expand limits on deductibility of business losses. So they say that's going to save them that's going to bring in $640 billion to pay off their embezzlement. Well, what did I say before? The SALT deduction, well, there's $285 billion that they're offsetting. So we're gonna raise your taxes to 830, but we're going to give you $235 back. So they've got some other revenue, reducing tax gaps, stuff like that. Let's face it. This is all smoke and mirrors. this is little more than Congress trying to come up with an excuse to make their theft just seem not quite as bad as it really is. The Build Back Better Act, it should have been dead on arrival, because none of these, nothing I've discussed so far, nothing I've read so far, in any way, shape, or form, falls under a power delegated by the Constitution to the United States. Therefore, it is void. The legislation is void. These taxes they're claiming are theft because they're being used. They're embezzlement because they're being used to do illegal things. And sadly, Congress gets away with it because we let them. Because most Americans are going to look at that and say, yeah, tax the rich. Or they're going to say, yeah, you know, I want that Medicaid. I want that Medicare. I want that benefit. I want that goodie. The American people have been bribed. But Paul, I want that universal pre-K. I want the Affordable Care Act. I want people to use solar power or electric cars. I want them to do that. Yep. And you're getting paid off. You're getting bribed. The Build Back Better Act is the Better Bribe America Act. It is nothing but an attempt to swindle the American people out of more of their money. Because every dollar they're going to spend, every dollar they collect to offset that spending, they're going to take a chunk off the top. This is a violation of their oath of office. But tell me, how many Americans are going to look their congressman in the eye and say, you stole from us? Now, I'm reminded of a story that Davy Crockett told of meeting a farmer who complained about an appropriation for the relief of the people in Georgetown. And Mr. Crockett voted for it. And he said he thought that was the last vote anybody would find fault with. To which the farmer replied, well, Colonel, where do you find in the Constitution any authority to give away the public's money in charity? There's my question to Congress. Where do you find the Constitution any authority to pay for any of these things? The answer is we don't. But the American people want it. So if the American people are willing to accept the bribe from the federal government, let's face it, you're indebted to the federal government. You're enslaved by the federal government. Do you want to know why all of this out of control federal government goes on? These unjust laws, these unconstitutional laws, these mandates, all of it starts when the American people are bribed by government. When we accept money from government that we are not due, then we become just as criminally complicit as those who vote for these bills. So you can look at Congress and say, this is void, this is a crime, this is a violation of the Constitution. We, the American people, are just as complicit because we take the money, we ask for the money, we beg for the money. We have sold our birthright as free citizens to a Congress for a few dollars. As Alexis de Tocqueville put it, the American Republic will endure until the day Congress discovers that it can bribe the public with the public's money. Not only have they discovered it, they have used it, and we the people have encouraged it. You can track a line from the allowing government to spend money it was not authorized to spend to the executive power being claimed to issue mandates. There is a connection between the two because we let government do what it was not authorized when it was a small thing. It has now grown and metastasized into a very large thing. We are reaping the whirlwind of our choices, our parents' choices, our grandparents' choices. The question is, will we learn our lesson? Will we stop rewarding congressmen and representatives, senators, presidents? Will we stop rewarding elected officials for this embezzlement and this crime? And again, not just in Congress. Sure, stop rewarding the congressmen, stop rewarding the president. How about your state officials? How about your local officials? How about your hospitals and your businesses that are accepting this money? When will we stop rewarding people for being complicit, for being accessories to the embezzlement, of which the Build Back Better Act is merely the latest example of the American people being bribed with their own money? Now, before I go, I want to remind you that America Out Loud Talk Radio plays on the iHeartRadio network. You can listen on our media player from any web browser anywhere in the world. We have the best-in-class apps for Apple, Android, and Alexa, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week streaming, and now you can even hear the podcasts. Just head to AmericaOutLoud.com, and if you would, please check out ConstitutionStudy.com and ConstitutionScholars.com for more information and how you, too, can become a constitutional scholar and help secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and to our posterity.
Pay the bills, stay out of jail, love the neighbors, and have a few good friends. Every day.